From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of July, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. We'll discuss, too, the upcoming AgriNext conference to be held in St. Louis, along with the AgriEnergies. We'll do that with Susan Stroud of Noble Ag. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast from Don Day on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day at $4.38.5, 2.5 lower. December new crop down 2.75 at $4.60.5, and the March at $4.75.75. 2.75 cents lower. November beans, $11.91, down 3.75. Meal, 20 cents higher for the day. Bean oil down 42 cents. Soft red winter in the December for the wheat at $6.59.75, up 9.25. The hard red wheat up 11.25 at $6.92.5. Naomi Bloom at TotalFarmMarketing.com now joins us from West Bend, Wisconsin. Thank you, Naomi, for joining us. First, I have to say, I've not been through West Bend until this past weekend. What a beautiful area you live in. It is just really gorgeous.
Yeah, thank you. So that whole Kettle Moraine Forest is right through there, along with just a variety of agriculture. And our crops right now are looking really amazing. So we are quite blessed, even with this heat that's come through. It's just a really gorgeous part of Wisconsin, and of course, not too far from Lake Michigan. I don't know, Todd, the secret's going to be out if you keep it up.
Well, if I keep traveling, it'll get out anyway. We should talk more about this marketplace. What kind of changes happened overnight into the day trade today?
Yeah, so with the grain markets, of course, yesterday grain prices had tested overhead resistance with this hot forecast that had been coming through. But last night, the forecast for this week, still hot. Next week, though, shifted to slightly cooler. And I think the biggest part is that for a good portion of the Midwest, those nighttime temperatures look to be a little bit below 70 degrees. So that's really good for the plant to have resting time at night. It'll help with yield. It'll help to offset the heat that's come through. So we're still kind of waiting to see if there's any rain that materializes with this. But at least the market took some of that heat pressure out of it, and that's why we have lower corn and soybean prices for most of the day today.
Yesterday, the crop progress report still showed that the corn and soybean condition remains good. Wheat almost completely harvested. That's ahead of time for at least the hard red wheat in the United States.
Yes, so crop progress ratings, corn is rated 68% good to excellent. Beans are 65% good to excellent. Both were 1 percentage point better than the prior week, so that also added to the overnight pressure. Wheat, I think that crop definitely getting harvested and wrapped up. Here in Wisconsin, wheat harvest right around where I live is definitely going strong. I saw that yesterday as I was out driving around. Wheat prices having a little bit of a recovery bounce today after yesterday's sell-off. So wheat was down yesterday, but trading a little bit higher today. And part of that, I think, is still on the uncertainty in the Black Sea region, specifically about Russia and Ukraine and blocking part of the Sea of Azov and some of the Russia grain exports. Are they going to happen? Are they not going to happen? So some little bit of war premium, in a sense, has gone back into the wheat market, lifting that price somewhat today.
Right. So we have the war in Ukraine. We have the war with Iran, both in full force again. It could cause an issue related both, I suppose, to the energies because of oil, but also because of food, particularly the Sea of Azov, which has been shuttered by the Ukrainians as much as they possibly can. And Russian wheat exports are important to come through the Black Sea and then to feed into the Middle East. How do you see wheat trading out over the next, I don't know, a few days, or as this begins to develop and people worry about bread lines in the Middle East again?
Yeah, it's going to be a balancing act, I think, now through the weekend to balance what's happening both in the Black Sea, also within the Middle East. And the fighting in the Middle East, you said it, escalating again, and it's going into additional nearby countries throughout the Middle East. So new sirens happening in some of those neighboring countries. So it's getting a little bit dicey over there again. So what we're going to be watching this weekend is how dramatic it gets, or is everybody going to start to cooperate and things simmer down? So now with crude oil, what we're watching is if crude oil prices can get back above and go back through that $80 resistance. $80 had been support for a couple months, so now it's going to be $80 resistance on those charts. And then for wheat, we're going to be watching September wheat and 650, which is some short-term resistance there as well. It's a little balancing act, and I'm kind of wondering if the market, unless something really big flares up over the next few days, I'm wondering if it's going to just kind of take it all in stride, get through the weekend, and then we'll see what next week brings.
Do you suppose that corn and soybeans related as biofuels will follow crude up this time, if weather remains decent and normal in the United States, that is?
Yeah, that's a good question. So part of it is the fund buying and that bushel basket of buying theory that they have done in years past. If crude oil gets exceedingly through $80, if it goes back towards $100, I do feel like the corn and soybeans or bean oil would follow along. But it may be a muted rally, especially if there is no further weather issue to our crop. But I do think it would be a little bit more of a follow-along rally that could be something that could happen for next week. But then we also have the standpoint that if things simmer down in the Middle East over the weekend, if the weather is a little bit more cooperative in the United States, there is that seasonal tendency for corn and soybean prices to then slide a little bit lower into the end of July and into early August. So it feels like we're at this potential turning point in the marketplace. We've taken out a lot of the bearish mentality that's been there thanks to the most recent quarterly stocks report, June acreage report, July USDA WASDE report. So that really over negative sentiment is kind of gone, but we're sitting at a neutral standpoint. And all of the things that we've talked about in our conversation are things that we have to weigh accordingly over the next week to 2 weeks.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you next week about it again.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it so much.
Naomi Bloom is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released its weekly crop progress report. The national data for corn, soybeans, and wheat all showed steady conditions week over week, though some of the state-level data has some interesting patterns. Nationally, 68% of the crop is rated good to excellent for corn. That's 1 point better than the previous week, but trails last year's 74%. Crop development for corn shows 34% of the corn is silking, 4 points ahead of the five-year average, and 6% is in the dough stage. For soybeans, 65% of the crop is rated good to excellent, representing a 1 point weekly gain. Half the soybean crop is currently blooming, which is 6 points ahead of the five-year average, while 19% of the beans are setting pods. Winter wheat harvest is 67% complete nationally. That's outpacing the 61% five-year average. Now, let's walk through some of the state-level data. Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois are underperforming the states west of the Mississippi by a notable margin. While national corn conditions improved, Illinois corn sits at 58% good to excellent. Ohio and Indiana are in the same range. Conversely, Minnesota is reporting exceptionally high crop conditions, rated 84% good to excellent, Iowa 78%, and North Dakota, for all the talk of the heat there over the weekend, showed corn condition at 71% good to excellent. Iowa's crop went in the ground early and is staying that course. Iowa corn silking jumped to 38%. And soybean blooming there reached 56%. Both are about 5 points ahead of their five-year averages. In Kansas, the winter wheat harvest is, for all intents and purposes, complete at 97%. That's earlier than the standard mid to late June timeline there. Now, each week this month, we're including the most current crop disease reports as well from the Land-Grant University's Crop Protection Network. There you'll find county maps with corn, wheat, and soybean diseases reported. This week, the Crop Lookout interactive map shows tar spot of corn becoming an issue across the center of Indiana and into Vermilion County, Illinois. then skipping across all of the rest of the state of Illinois, but being reported in 12 Iowa counties and 6 Minnesota counties. There's a cluster of 5 in the southwestern corner of Minnesota. Tar spot is also showing up in the counties along the Nebraska-Kansas border, as we reported last week. And notably, Iowa's western counties are not reporting tar spot. However, most of the Nebraska corn-producing counties are. Southern rust of corn is non-existent anywhere in the Midwest. Soybean diseases are also absent across the whole of the Midwest. You may find the Crop Lookout interactive map, by the way, and spraying recommendations from the nation's land-grant university field crop plant pathologist on the Crop Protection Network website. That's at CropProtectionNetwork.org. On Tuesdays, we always check the agricultural energy. Susan Stroud is here. She's with Noble Ag. Hi, Susan. You're from the St. Louis area. Thank you for being with us again today. Let's start with something that's really important, which is at the end of the month, you organize, and I think this is the fifth year, maybe, annual.
It's the fourth year. It's the fourth, but it might as well be the fifth or the 50th is what it feels like.
An annual event that really goes deep into agriculture. This year, you have a partner in Bloomberg, and I think it's just fantastic. The lineup I've been watching has a couple of folks that I'm really familiar with, and I'll be there. I'm planning on making it to this. Can you tell me a little bit about the event first before we talk about the Ag Energies?
Sure. I'm so excited that you can come. So it is 2 weeks away. It's the evening of Monday, July 27th, and then it runs through all day on Tuesday, the 28th. The event kind of has three parts. So we start Monday evening with the Boa Safra Ag Beer Garden kickoff at Anheuser-Busch. And so it's a welcome networking event. With food, guided brewery tours, we'll see the Clydesdales and all that good stuff. Then day two, really the main part of the conference is Inflection Point, is this year's theme, Policy, Trade, and the Forces Reshaping Agriculture. That will be all day on Tuesday at Ballpark Village in downtown St. Louis. It's really, as you mentioned, Bloomberg co-presenting this year with Bloomberg, and so that means that we have the Bloomberg Intelligence team will be there moderating the discussions. The topics that we're really, you know, we kind of start with agriculture at this crossroads because we've had a lot of things happening here over the course of the past several months where it's not just trade policy that's come into focus, but also we've had huge changes in biofuel policy, and now lots of geopolitical things that are just causing extra chaos in ag. One big focal point of this year's event, I'm excited about Feeding the Future. This panel, we are going to talk a lot about the global protein demand story that's really pushing ag forward, and it's giving us surprisingly strong meal demand, too, that's helping underpin record global crush expansion. We'll be talking inputs, fertilizer. We will also have Sunny Westcott there. I think it's Sunny the Weather Lady, I believe, is how she's known, to talk about El Nino, too. Back for the second year in a row, we will have a panel that puts the spotlight on production in Brazil, except this year we're bringing in not only a Brazilian producer, but we do have Ken Dahlenberg from Illinois that will be joining us too, alongside Kurt Klecker with Cargill Risk Management. So we're going to have a discussion kind of talking about what ag is going through, the challenges, you know, as far as break-evens and growth, and where do we go from here? I think that will be a really insightful one. I have someone coming in from FS, the large corn ethanol producer, Mato Grosso, Brazil. That one should be a really good one. Also, biofuels go front and center. Brett Gibbs will be there with a loaded panel. And we'll by the end of the day, hopefully give everyone in the audience just a really good, some places that you can focus on growth, putting things in perspective, and definitely with aligning with the name of the event, which is AgriNext, and the idea is to just really help help attendees get a better grasp of, you know, where we are now, but how do we take what we know today and we apply it going forward, what we can look at in the months to come. And the event concludes that evening with the CME group Cardinals versus Cubs all-inclusive baseball experience, which is going to be a good one for sure. Yeah.
It should be a fantastic day. A couple of names that I know on the panels, Mike McGloin, of course, from Bloomberg.
Oh, yeah. He's a super fan of yours, by the way.
Yeah. He's at the All Day I Got Look every year. For those who have been there, probably have run into him. I've never seen him up front, so I'm going to be really excited to hear that. Of course, you mentioned that Mr. Dallenberg will be there. Ken is from Mansfield, about 5 miles away here. I've been to the farm, so it'll be interesting to watch him up front. He's been really active in policy. I think that should be interesting. And John Ricci from the CME Group will be on hand. I've talked to him a couple of times, a very, very good source about volatility and the markets themselves. Those who are interested should go to nobuleag.com, and then you're going to look for the Agra Next conference. Now, we need to talk, because you mentioned biofuels, we need to talk about diesel. We can talk about SAF, sustainable aviation fuel, in this process as well. The president changing his mind, apparently, that there will not be, or probably not be, a 20% fee to transit the Strait of Hormuz, something he said yesterday. The market took that well, I'm sure. But as you look forward, how problematic do you think diesel fuel is going to be for farmers this fall and for the global in general?
I think the biggest challenge right now is that we've, the market's kind of, I don't want to say that we've been lulled to sleep, but the volatility and the back and forth, is the strait open or not? Is there a ceasefire? It's wearing old on all of us now. And so last week was really the first time that we saw things get a little more exciting than they've been in a while. And we had those, you know, we've had a couple really big moves, single day moves, especially in heating oil, for instance, like up 36 cents one day last week, yesterday up 27 cents. And then today, August futures are up 15 cents again. So yeah, it's a 1-2 punch between what's happening in this, the longer that this mess drags out in the Middle East. Plus, you have the situation with Russia putting some controls in place on their exports and further escalation and conflict between Russia and Ukraine. And so all of those things are kind of colliding at the same time. And suddenly we've found ourselves back at $4 futures.
And then, of course, you have USMCA in this process as well, which is an interesting thought, simply because so much of the Canadian heavy crude comes across the border into the United States, right into the Chicagoland area and other places, to be distilled into diesel fuel as well. So there's just a lot happening that could really squeeze the available amount of diesel fuel over time. It is something I suppose producers and everybody else is going to have to keep a really close eye on. And we'll know, I think, Susan, and you can help me answer this question, how bad, how quick, based on how the airlines are doing in Europe, because most of their kerosene or jet fuel is coming via, or a lot of it coming via, the Strait of Hormuz. And that might be an early indicator, I suppose.
It's just amazing how the domino effect and the way that we've seen things play out in energy markets the past several months, because at the same time that you have everything going on in the Middle East, you also have the U.S., where we've officially, you know, put this new record large mandate, RVO, into place. And so that's created some problems, too, because just at the same time that Europe is in this massive crunch for energies and even biofuels, you have the U.S. over here that has had this massive mandate. And in many cases, instead of us actually blending those biofuel supplies here domestically to help meet the mandate, we are exporting so many gallons to Europe right now. But it's because of the price differences and the fact that they're in a major, major supply crunch with what's happening in the Middle East.
And finally, can you talk about the SPR, or the Strategic Petroleum Reserve? Those numbers have been emptied out over the past 6 months in an enormous and inordinate way.
Yeah, and you know, the thing going into it is that we weren't really, I'm not certain that we ever really built it back. I mean, we've been trending this direction for years. And so now we're still, again, we find ourselves in one heck of a mess because we see the SPR continue to be depleted.
Thank you much. I look forward to seeing you at the end of the month in St. Louis.
All right. Sounds great.
Susan Stroud is with No Bull Ag at NoBullAg.com, where you can sign up today for the AgriNext Conference. It is at the end of this month in St. Louis. Now up next, we'll hear about the weather forecast from Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
The main story will be the heat, especially across the northern tier of the United States, centered on the northern plains, the Dakotas, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, into the central and northern Great Lakes will be the hottest. Temperatures will be well above average, though, elsewhere, with the Corn Belt, in particular, the Northwest Corn Belt and the Western Corn Belt, the hottest, while temperatures will be at or a little bit below average across the southern tier of the U.S. and the desert southwest. The big high-pressure ridge responsible for this heat will also make conditions pretty dry. We see below-average precipitation for those states centered on the heat, Iowa in particular, Nebraska, Minnesota, a good part of the eastern Dakotas, parts of Kansas, and into the eastern plains of Colorado. Over the next 7 days, very little or no precipitation, while the southern and eastern Corn Belt will see some rains, not a lot, but some rains, half to maybe an inch over portions of Illinois, Indiana. Some areas of rain in some of the flooded areas of southern Missouri will be a possibility as well. This heat and overall general dry trend, especially for the northern and western Corn Belt, may extend all the way past the 10 to 12 days or more, as the high-pressure ridge will be stubborn to dissolve.
Don Day is with Day Weather. He's out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and left us that update of the weather forecast for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world. Online, on demand, at WILLAG.org. Tomorrow, I'm headed towards Kansas City, but we'll drop off at the Ore Center in Bayless. That's in western Illinois. Starting around 8:30, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning is the agronomy day there. Please join us if you get the opportunity. That's at the Ore Agricultural Center outside of Bayless to the west of Jacksonville. I'm Todd Gleason.